This is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Today on Jaws of Justice Radio, we start our show with Margot Patterson talking to Doug Bonney, lead litigator for the Kansas and Western Missouri ACLU. They will talk about county jail policies that infringe on prisoner rights. Then, in the second half of our show, I will talk with Glenna Greer, public affairs officer with the KCVA, about the second annual Women Veterans Benefits Fair and Resource Expo, and some other things. Keep tuned in for the whole hour. We will be doing our calendar in the middle of the show, and the 420 drug war news has moved to after our goodbyes. Up next is Margot and Doug.
This is Margot Patterson with Jaws of Justice Radio. My guest today is Doug Bonney, legal director of the ACLU for Kansas and Western Missouri. And he, as director, he's involved, of course, in a wide range of issues, but he's here today to talk to us about conditions in Missouri and Kansas jails. Welcome, Doug. Tell us what you're seeing in county jails that is getting the ACLU involved.
We see a lot of things in county jails, but our current focus is on jail mail rules and prohibitions on newspapers and magazines. But we deal with the full range of jail conditions issues, including medical care and jail meals and religious exercise by inmates, things like that.
And what's the concern about jail mail?
There are a number of things that we look at in a jail mail rule. One of those is that a number of jails around here over the last few years have adopted postcard-only policies, and some of those policies require inmates to write out to people on postcards only. Some of them require people writing to inmates to use postcards only, and some policies do both.
So how is that affecting prisoners?
It has very serious effects on prisoners because it is very difficult to write in the space of a postcard about any serious subject. And inmates are people just like the rest of us. They have the same problems that the rest of us have. They have family issues. They have medical issues. They have interpersonal issues, relationship issues that they need to talk to people about. And in fact, the fact of their incarceration probably magnifies those problems for them and makes it, frankly, even more important that they have open and robust communication about those subjects.
Is there anything in particular that inspired these jail mail rules?
Well, it's hard to know, but some of the jails adopted the rules because some sheriffs around the country admire Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Maricopa County, Arizona, which is Phoenix, who's adopted a wide range of harsh rules to essentially punish his inmates. And one of those policies was a postcard-only rule. I know that some of the sheriffs in this part of the country have adopted the rule because they like Arpaio. Others, I think, just saw it and didn't think much about it and thought, oh yeah, that's a good idea. That'll save us money or save us time in processing mail.
And am I right in thinking this is the sheriff in Arizona who has been so harsh on immigrants?
Yes, absolutely. Same one.
Well, maybe give us a little, or me anyway, a little bit, how many jails are we talking about and how many jails are in the area that you look at?
Well, the jurisdiction of the ACLU of Kansas and Western Missouri has 105 counties in Kansas, that's all the counties in Kansas, and 46 counties in Missouri. So there are probably about 151 county jails in our jurisdiction because every county has a county jail.
Well, some people, including myself, are probably ignorant about the distinction between a jail and a prison. Could you tell us a little bit about why some people end up in jail and others end up in state or federal prisons?
Sure. So jails are run by local governments, usually the county. In almost all instances in Kansas and Missouri, the county sheriff is responsible for running the county jail. That's not true in Jackson County, Missouri, or Shawnee County, Kansas, because there the counties have created a Department of Corrections to run the jail and have taken it away from the sheriff's department. County jails hold inmates that are either serving a sentence of a year or less, so a misdemeanor sentence, or are awaiting trial on any charges, felony charges or lesser charges. And state prisons are run by the state government and are built to house felony convicted inmates, so people serving more than a year of confinement.
So these stringent prohibitions on mail are being placed on, it sounds like, prisoners who have committed fairly minor transgressions?
Or have not been convicted of any transgression whatsoever. Pretrial detainees make up the bulk of the inmates in any county jail.
So has the ACLU been filing suits about this, or what's been happening as far as trying to correct this problem?
So we do two things. One, we often hear about prison or jail conditions from inmates who write to us. We get a lot of inmate mail. In addition, so sometimes we've found out about postcard-only policies through the inmates. And in Kansas this summer, we started a program where we used the state open records law to request copies of the policies of all the bigger jails in Kansas. So we're in the process of going through the 50 largest counties in Kansas, which actually takes you down to counties with fewer than 5,000 people in them. So we're covering almost all the people in Kansas with that. And so we get the policies. When we find a jail that has a postcard-only policy, we first try to contact the jail. We tell them that their policy is unconstitutional and ask them to change it. And we do tell them that we will sue them if they don't change it. So far, every jail that I've contacted has changed its policy through a written demand. Most recently, Allen County, Kansas, and Atchison County, Kansas, abolished their postcard-only policies, both of which prohibited incoming and outgoing inmate mail in regular letters.
Which is more common, the prohibition on incoming mail or outgoing mail?
Probably a policy that prohibits both, that requires postcard only on all inmate mail, with the exception of privileged legal mail. Probably that's the most common policy. Next is probably that if the policy doesn't cover all inmate mail and required all to be on postcards, then it is usually on incoming mail. And the reason is that jailers think that it's easier to defend a postcard-only requirement on incoming mail because there is the issue of smuggling stuff into jails. That's really not an adequate explanation for having a postcard-only policy, because it's always been the law that jailers can open any mail and inspect it for contraband. And that includes legal mail. So postcard only is not a necessary policy to prohibit incoming contraband.
Can jailers read all mail coming in?
Jailers can read all mail except privileged legal mail. And so because inmates have, and their lawyers, like me, have a right to communicate privately without the government's eyes seeing what you're talking about, there's a privilege for legal mail. That mail has to be opened in front of the inmate. So they have to bring the inmate in, open the legal mail in front of the inmate, and only inspect it for contraband. So they can look inside the envelope and see what's in there, make sure that there's not a file or a knife or something like that. But they can't read the letter.
You mentioned when we spoke earlier today that there was also a concern about banning prisoners from getting newspapers and magazines and periodicals. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Quite a few jails in both Missouri and Kansas have had newspaper and magazine bans. One of them that I know of right now, and I've been trying to persuade to change their policy, so far I haven't got a client there, is Jasper County Jail, which prohibits newspapers. And there are all kinds of cases going back more than 40 years saying that jails cannot ban newspapers. Both the publishers of newspapers and magazines and the inmates have a First Amendment right to acquire information and read the paper.
What is the rationale jailers give for prohibiting prisoners from reading newspapers?
A common rationale is we didn't think about any reason, we just did it. That's probably the most common. If they ever really thought about what they were doing, it's usually something foolish like to prohibit clutter in the jail. In Jasper County's case, which includes Joplin, Missouri, although the jail is actually in Carthage, the rationale was, well, we don't want inmates to see stuff that will upset them. That's ridiculous, but...
Do prisoners in jails usually have access to TV news?
They do.
So...
TV news is no adequate substitute
for the written
word.
Of course, I would certainly agree with you there. What are some of the other problems that you're seeing in Missouri and Kansas jails?
We see, just this week, I wrote a letter to a sheriff in a county, a few counties north of here, where an inmate has very serious medical problems, and according to the inmate's relative who contacted me, the jailers told the inmate and her that they have no responsibility for the inmate's medical care, and that if the family wants the inmate cared for, that they need to provide his care. That is ridiculous. That's unconstitutional. Jails have a constitutional obligation to provide medical care for their inmates who have serious medical needs. And if they don't do it, they can be sued for being deliberately indifferent to their inmates' medical needs. And if the jail really did say those things, they have a serious problem.
And now we have some messages for our listeners. When we get back, we'll return to our discussion with Doug Bonney, legal director of the ACLU for Western Missouri and Kansas. This is Margo Patterson with Jaws of Justice Radio. We're here today discussing with Doug Bonney, legal director of the ACLU for Western Missouri and Kansas, some of the issues and problems he's seen in Kansas and Missouri jails. I'm curious if you think conditions in Missouri and Kansas jails are getting better or worse for prisoners.
Oh, they're probably about the same. I think if we really see the cuts in taxes that have already been enacted in Kansas, when those hit the counties, and if Missouri really does cut taxes like the legislature wants to override the governor's veto on, those effects will trickle down to the counties as well, and then we may really see conditions decline in county jails. I don't think we see an overwhelming decline in conditions right now. What we see is kind of the result of unprofessional management and kind of unthinking management.
You were speaking about problems with jail health care. What happens when a prisoner does fall seriously ill? Do most jails have medical facilities there? Do they send these prisoners to a local hospital? What's the procedure usually?
So bigger jails tend to have some kind of an infirmary that is often not bad. I toured the Greene County Jail 5 years ago, I guess now. And they have a very fine medical facility staffed by three or four nurses. And, you know, the inmates complain about the care they get, but the jail does take it seriously and provides care. So bigger jails will have that kind of setup. Wyandotte County tries to provide a lot of the care in the jail because it's cheaper for the jail to do that, to have staff that provides the care. More seriously ill inmates, even in a bigger jail like Wyandotte County or Greene County, they send them out to the hospital if they really are seriously ill. And that, of course, poses a whole host of problems. Guarding inmates in the hospital is, I'm sure, no treat.
I've no idea what most counties end up spending on their jails. Is there any information you might have about what's the average cost of keeping a person in a county jail?
No, I don't have that information, but I do know some of the numbers. A number of jails have to farm out inmates because they're not big enough to hold all of the inmates they need to hold, and that includes Wyandotte County. Wyandotte County has about 382 beds. They have a lot more inmates than that, and they farm some of them out to other county jails. And also, there's a privately run facility that holds over 1,000 inmates, and a lot of their inmates are federal pretrial detainees. It's called CCA Leavenworth. It's up in Leavenworth. And the prices for farm outs range anywhere from in the $40 range to $100 a day. A number I recently saw, I think, was $70-some dollars a day for CCA.
I'm assuming, but perhaps this is wrong, that the cost of housing somebody in a county jail would be less than in a state prison or a federal prison?
That's probably a safe bet.
And how long, and you may have mentioned this earlier, do people usually stay in a county jail?
Well, they might stay for a few hours, or if they face very serious felony charges, they can stay for many years. And this is why we take jail conditions in county jails very seriously, because inmates facing serious felony charges can stay there for a long time, and they don't have access to things like outdoor recreation often. That may be something that we look at next.
And are these inmates all awaiting trial?
No, not all, but most county jail inmates are pretrial detainees. They're awaiting trial.
Earlier when we spoke, you mentioned something about private sector jails, and I do not know anything about private sector jails. Is that a sort of new and popular trend? How many of them are there?
It's not something we have looked at much. They are a relatively new trend. There are some big companies that operate private jails. The biggest corporation is Corrections Corporation of America, which is CCA. It's something that is of questionable use. Many people think that it's a waste of taxpayer money.
I'm assuming that the county then contracts with one of these private jail companies and sort of hires them to take their inmates?
Yeah, it can be that way. Mostly around here, there isn't a lot of private jail activity. There's the CCA facility in Leavenworth. There was one down in Johnson County, Missouri. That one had a lot of problems, and I'm not even sure it's still open.
Doug, we've talked a lot about county jails. Are there conditions in state and federal prisons that you're concerned about?
Sure. There are issues in state and federal prisons, but those generally, state and federal prisons are better managed. They have professional management that the county jails often don't have. So the problems are different and usually to a lesser degree, but there's still problems.
If I send a letter to a prisoner in a supermax federal facility, will it reach him? Will he be able to receive my letter?
It is permissible for the Supreme Court about 8 years ago decided a case called Banks, I forget what the full name of it is, but where they said it is permissible to prohibit an inmate from having publications delivered to him in mail if there's a good reason for it and if it's a inmate control issue. But permanently prohibiting them from having that, I don't think that would be constitutional.
Even if it's a letter from a journalist wanting to publicize something about their story?
Yeah, absolutely. The journalist has a right to correspond, and that principle has been established in a number of cases, but some of the litigation was filed by Mumia Abu-Jamal, who has been in prison in Pennsylvania for years and is a journalist and publishes himself.
Well, Doug Bunny, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And now the calendar for September 16th. Blue Hills Community Services presents another workshop in their Quality of Life Information Series. This time is Mental Health First Aid. This training will be conducted in two sessions, Monday, October 14th and Monday, October 21st, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. at 5008 Prospect Avenue, KCMO. Mental Health First Aid is a public education program that helps the public identify, understand, and respond to signs of mental illnesses and substance use disorders. You will learn a five-step action plan encompassing the skills, resources, and knowledge to help an individual in crisis connect with appropriate care. To register, call Leigh Blumenthal at 816-333-7870, extension 203, or email Leigh, that's L-E-I-G-H, at bhcsmo.org. by October 4th. Webster University is offering tuition discounts to first responders starting this fall. Qualified law enforcement professionals, fire department personnel, EMT personnel, and 911 dispatchers will receive a reduced tuition rate in Webster's undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral programs. You are invited to a special information session to learn more about the First Responder Program on Tuesday, September 17th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at Webster University, Kansas City. That's at 1200 East 104th Street, basically I-435 and Holmes in Kansas City, Missouri. Please RSVP today to www.webster.edu/KC or call 816-926-4288. You can find additional information on the First Responder Program at www.webster.edu/first responder. The Veterans Administration Drive-Through Flu Shot Clinic will be open 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. September 30th through October 5th and October 7th through October 10th. The clinic will be located behind the KCVA at the Friendship Baptist Church, 3530 Chelsea Drive, KCMO. You must be eligible for VA medical benefits to get your shot. If you are a veteran and you receive your flu shot somewhere other than the VA, please contact your PAC team by sending them a secure message or calling them. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Please tune in to Law and Disorder tomorrow when Heidi Boghossian talks about her book, Spying on Democracy, and Ajamu Baraka talks about Syria and U.S. humanitarian intervention. Next week on Jaws of Justice Radio, a KC Police Department CSI, and then Sean O'Brien is in to talk about property forfeiture in drug cases. This is Jeff. Overall, women make up about 10% of U.S. military veterans, but they are 11.6% of the Iraq-Afghanistan era veterans. Their role in combat zones has increased dramatically, as has the incidence of PTSD and military sexual trauma. The Government Accountability Office estimates that the rank of the homeless female veterans has risen more than 140% since 2006 to 3,328 in fiscal year 2010. In an effort to encourage women veterans in the KC area to take advantage of the help that is available to them, this Friday, September 20th, the KCVA is hosting the second annual Women's Veterans Benefits Fair and Resource Expo. This event will focus on introducing women veterans to the benefits they have earned and inform them of government and community resources available for them and their families. Today with us is Glenna Greer, Public Affairs Officer at the KCVA, to tell us about the Benefits Fair and Resource Expo for Women and more. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio, Glenna.
Great day.
Are the female veterans in this area, are they signing up for benefits, or are there a significant number of them out there that still need to be reached?
There is a significant number that needs to be reached, and this event is an excellent opportunity for women veterans to come out and hear about the benefits, but not just about the healthcare benefits. We also will have the Veterans Benefit Office there. They can hear about home loans, they can hear about educational benefits, they can hear about how to file a claim if they were injured during their active duty time. We are hoping to get a wide group of ladies coming out just to understand that. And honestly, we want them to make a good, informed decision about their health care benefits. Are they currently in the workplace and they've got health care? If so, then compare what we can offer you as a veteran, what you've earned, compared to what the company is providing you with. And we really just want to create awareness. We were at an event last week, actually on Saturday, at a church in Grandview, and I had a gentleman come up to me, and he said, you know, I've been out of the military for 30 years, and I've never used you guys, and you sold it today. So we are very passionate about what we do here. We have a phenomenal staff. We have services that are unparalleled, and our physicians and providers across the spectrum understand veterans. And we have a women's clinic that provides health care just for women, and the providers are women. We have, except for our GYN surgeon, is a male. But we're about to open in...
We'll get to that in just a minute. I have some other questions about the fair and the expo itself. One thing I will say is that I always encourage young veterans that are coming out, you know, after their service, to go and register with the VA.
Yes.
No matter what, even if they're going back to a job and they have insurance and everything else, because you never know when at some point you're going to need that care, and that may be the care that's available to you at the time. Also, having that card in your pocket helps when you go to buy things at certain locations. Folks give you a discount, so mm-hmm. There's always
Absolutely.
That, of course. Who came up with this idea of the Benefits Fair and Expo, and what kind of turnout have you had, did you have last year?
Our director, Mr. Hill, Kent Hill, he charged me. I am his staff assistant. I'm also his public affairs officer, and I lead the outreach team. He charged me and the Women Veteran Coordinator last year to hold a women's event. He wanted something that would be an outreach event targeting the women veteran population. So the outreach team, we got together and we talked about what could we do that would really draw women in. Women, they're kind of a hard group to reach. They're busy people, and they are a hard group to reach. And then some of them have preconceived opinions about veteran health care. So we talked about, we didn't want to go with a strict chick event because women veterans are also tough, professional women, and that might not be the type of draw. They may not feel like they've got time for something like that. So, but we talked at length, and we came up with this idea that what if we expanded a typical outreach event to include benefits across the spectrum. We always invite the Missouri Veterans Commission, so they come in and they talk about Missouri veteran benefits. And again, I mentioned these the VBA veterans benefits, and also the cemetery system comes out and talks about end-of-life benefits for veterans. And so we talked about that, and we said, what if we go a step further? Women are typically, historically, the caregivers in the home. And what if we expanded that to resources for her family? And that's what we did. And it was so successful last year. We were so thrilled with it. We had employment, which we're having again this year. We have groups coming out that will work with veterans on employment opportunities. We have Medicare, Medicaid is coming out to help the female with any family needs that she might have. We have Alzheimer's Association coming. We have legal aid coming.
Glenna, if a veteran has not signed up for benefits before, and they come to the event, can they sign up? And what kind of documentation do they need to bring to be able to sign up?
And get, if they know where their DD-214 is, that is, it just expedites. Now we can we have a website we can get DD-14s from. We can pull from it. It just expedites if she will bring that. And if she, that's basically it. There's nothing that you have to bring. A DD-214, of course, is the discharge papers, and so that's it. And we, even if you are currently enrolled, we are encouraging women to come out, meet other women, learn about the programs we have at the hospital, learn about all of the different things in the community that you have available. We had over 200 women come last year. We considered that a very successful event.
Most people, when they think of the VA, they just think of the medical benefits. They don't really think of the other programs. When you have your interview, your separation interview, so to say, in the military, you know, they do tell you about some of the other benefits. But I think you mentioned a couple of them. One was you know, the loan programs and things like that. What are some of the other things that not only the VA, but the VA hospital itself offers that people may not, you know, think about?
We have the preventive health side is growing. We have weight loss programs. We have tobacco cessation programs. We have military sexual trauma coordinators, so any female and male who has been victimized while on active duty, they have a counselor they can come and talk to about that. And, of course, that is a very personal, private situation, and that is totally protected. We have inside the hospital, we have a group of veteran service officers from VFW, DAV, American Legion. They can help the veteran through the system. They can help them file a claim. Say, for instance, injured a knee while on active duty. That service officer will help them file a claim. Sometimes it is a compensable service connection to where there's actually money coming because of that injury. That also makes a difference in the eligibility for health care. Your prescriptions for anything service connected is free. And so it all of that is here at the hospital. Now, the benefits side of the house, our service officers can help somewhat with that, but that's why it's so important that anybody with questions can come to this event, because we actually have a representative. We do not have a representative on station now for benefits, but at this event we're going to have two. And so if you've got questions, like we mentioned, home loans, education, claims, your burial benefits, we will have representatives that will that are available to talk to you about how you can apply for all of those.
So women veterans that don't need medical care, particularly from the VA, should come to this event also. What are some of the other agencies and vendors in particular that you have coming? I know you mentioned Medicare and Medicaid and
yes.
things like that, but you also mentioned that these are some tough women. So I don't imagine you have the nail salon or the hair.
Actually, we do.
Oh, well, good deal.
We are including Mary Kay wanted to come out. That's kind of fun. A cosmetology school is coming out for the education part, but we'll also be available to talk with the ladies. We have Baker University coming. We have an organization called Green Vet Clothing, and there will actually be clothing available. Transportation Service is coming out. Synergy, which is a domestic violence group. We have the health department, and it's for the kids. It's the Safety Street. Job Corps is coming out. Rose Brooks, a women's shelter, they're coming out. Legal Aid.
I think we had talked about Connections to Success also.
They are coming again this year. We were thrilled. They were hugely popular last year. I had one lady, I told her, I said, you got to go in that boutique, and she said, I just don't need any more clothes if I spend any more money. And I said, no, they're free. I said, this is really cool. They come out, and they will actually give a lady an outfit to help transition her back into the workplace. And the ladies that run that are just a hoot, and we had so much fun with them. And I had women coming down with new scarves, and it's hard to explain what a cool event last year was. So we actually hope to exceed that this year. We also have the different departments in our hospital are coming out to talk with staff, be able to talk to them, pharmacy for any pharmaceutical needs specific to women, the patient advocate for the transition program of the women who would be returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. That individual is coming. Transportation. We've started a new transportation program here coming in from rural communities. Yuri, our transportation coordinator, he will be there to talk about the availability of transportation to your appointments. So it is, I think we have over with VA, with the groups from, you know, that's coming from our hospital, we have right now around 44 resources coming.
All right. Why don't you let people know when and where this event's going to be held? Do they need to register ahead of time, or you know, how do they get to this thing?
Good question. And you do not have to register. And since it is a fair, it is a drop-in. It is Friday the 20th of September.
That's coming Friday.
Mm-hmm. Friday. And we open at 2 o'clock, and we run until 7. And this year we're having it at the Sermon Center in Independence, Missouri.
Okay.
And that is located on 201 North Dodgen, Dodgion Street. And I think it's really located, if you know where Truman and Nolan intersect, we're just around the corner from that.
Yeah, that's just off of the square in Independence.
It is, And it's a beautiful event center. I think the ladies will be really pleased to come out, and the location is very, very easy access, great parking. So we really do encourage women to come. We have had one man ask if he can come with his wife. We said certainly.
The Benefits Fair and Women's Veterans Benefits Fair and Resource Expo are not the only things that's happening over at the VA right now, and I wanted to ask you about a couple others.
Sure.
You have the new Honor Annex that's getting ready to open here soon. Why don't you tell us what that is and you know, where it's at? And
it is located near Stadium Drive. It's actually right behind the Walmart Lowe's center there off of I-70 and Blue Ridge. It is the old Kaiser Permanente building. We currently have a construction project going on to bring it to VA standards. VA has their own standards on safety and everything, and we currently have a construction crew in there working on that. And our target date to see the first patients is by February, hopefully as early as January. And the groups going in there, we have certain primary care groups that will be going in, but it will be women's health for sure. They get an entire section of that building, and last year that's where we had our event, so the women were able to see where they would be going for their health care. It is beautiful. There's children play areas there for while you, if you bring your children while you wait for an appointment. The other group that we'll be going over is some of our PTSD groups, and we are very excited about that. They have the first, the half of the first floor will be dedicated space for PTSD groups. And we had a group that came in. It was during the All-Star game. The Royals approached us, and they did a project there and started the Serenity Garden. And that is, it's going to be so beautiful. It's got a fountain. It's just an area to just go and sit and meditate. And that is behind the Honor Annex. And particularly felt that the PTSD groups would probably benefit from that. So our goal is to open that by January 2014.
Yes, and that is located west of Lowe's, right there on 43rd Street. I think you can get to it on 43rd Street. And there may be an entrance also off of Sterling. I'm not real sure, but it's just to the west of that. All right, you have one other thing going on. Is there anybody that's been up at the VA hospital in the last 6 months knows that there's something happening up in on the upper floors there? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that construction's all about?
We have three construction projects, and they're impacting the construction's going on the fifth floor, the 5 East, 7 East, and 10 East. Well, the 5 East project is expanding our surgery, and we will be moving the current inpatient area, which is 3 West, will be moving to the fifth floor, and that co-locates them with our OR department. So that is the surgical wing. So that one is underway. On the seventh floor, this one we're all extremely excited about, is a new dialysis center. And the current dialysis center is on 6. It's very crowded. They have expanded their hours to accommodate all of the patients. And this new project will be state-of-the-art equipment, state-of-the-art. It should just be beautiful. And it's moving to 6. And then on the 10th floor, we are expanding our inpatient acute psychiatric ward, and that is what eventually will be all of the 10th floor. Right now it's 10 West. We're expanding it to make it more spacious, to make it more attractive, and just improve access for veterans that need to be hospitalized for acute psychiatric conditions. So we are in the throes of all of those. Some of the areas have been blocked, but we've tried to post good signage. It's one of those where it's painful. It's like renovating a home. It's painful, but when it's done, it's awesome. And those should be completed early next year.
Okay. How would, we're just about out of time, but how would folks find out about the event Friday and some of the other happenings at the VA hospital? What, you know, is there a website or is there?
We do. We have our website and we also have a Facebook, and we keep both of those very up to date. We posted the women's event a couple of times. We've got it out there. We've also got a lot of media marketing going on, and so stay tuned to that. But if you want to go to the Facebook, it is just VA Kansas City Facebook. That is one way to stay, and that is literally, we post things immediately there. It's a little quicker than our internet site just because it's easier to access for us. But we also have an internet site, and it is kansascity.va.gov, okay. And that is our website.
All right, and quickly, how would they contact you if there was somebody out there that wanted to be a vendor or want to be involved in some of your outreach programs or have one of your outreach programs come to them?
Exactly, and I love that. The networking that goes on at these events is phenomenal. They can call 861-4700 and ask for the Public Affairs Department. My name is Glenna.
Okay, and that's 861-4700.
Yes.
And that is a Missouri number, an 816 number.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Our guest today has been Glenna Greer, Public Affairs Officer at the KCVA Medical Center. We want to thank you for being with us today, Glenna. You've been a very good guest and got a lot of information out there today.
It's my privilege. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. To find a link to audio of today's show, our calendar of events, and more, check out Jaws of Justice Radio on Facebook. To contact us, send an email to jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And to find out about future shows, check us out on KKFI's website, kkfi.org. My name is Jeff Humfeld. We thank our engineers, Joe Henderson and Mike Murphy, host of the Wednesday Morning Buzz. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Friday. Up next is Beautician's Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then, round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical. Today's outro theme music is Better Man from the Playing for Change Songs Around the World CD. I'm gonna get back.